Heyo, and welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part one of The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight. The tagline on the cover says, "It's a field of screams," like the movie, A Field of Dreams, and shows a scarecrow that looks suspiciously like Scarecrow from Batman, especially Batman the Animated Series, which was at its absolute height when this came out in May 1994. So, yeah, I called you guys on that shit, didn't I? Yeah, so yesterday and Friday, it's just been constant stuff of being in the first bridal shower, groom shower, as a groomsman at a wedding for Chris and Shane, so congratulations. And it was a weird experience, so I've been doing that nonstop. I'm not hungover, because I don't really get hangovers, but I had the drinking nonstop, just straight liquor for days, so my body feels just dried out, and I had to take a nap today. But I'm doing alright. It was weird. It's very traditional. I was on my best behavior. Congratulations. That being said, I'm gonna start this bitch off and hopefully get it up tonight, change my zoom to 125%, and kick it off with the old chapter one, yeah. "Hey Jody, wait up," they said, hopefully talking to Jody Highroller, a.k.a. Riff Rack, a.k.a. Cocaine Dawkins. Damn it, I need to stop talking right when I get on here. Chapter 1. "Hey Jody, wait up." I turned and squinted into the bright sunlight. My brother, Mark, was still on the concrete train platform. The train had clattered off. I could see it was snaking its way through the low green meadows in the distance. I turned to Stanley. Stanley is the hired man on my grandparents' farm. "Slave. He's a slave." He stood beside me, carrying both suitcases. "Look at the dictionary for the word slowpoke," I said, "and you'll see Mark's picture. But don't look in a Pokedex, because that'll be a totally different picture." Stanley smiled at me. "I like the dictionary, Jody," he said. "Sometimes I read it for hours." I didn't use a traditional slave voice, just like Songs of the South, because I'm not offensive today. "Hey, Mark, get a move on," I cried. But he was taking his good time, walking slowly, in a daze as usual. I tossed my blonde hair behind my shoulders and turned back to Stanley. Mark and I hadn't visited the farm for a year, but Stanley still looks the same because black don't crack. "He's so skinny, like a noodle," my grandma always says. "His denim overalls look like five sizes too big for him." Stanley's about 40 or 45, I think. He wears his dark hair in a crew cut, shaved close to his head. His ears are huge. They stick way out and are always bright red, because he's drunk. And he has big, round, brown eyes that remind me of puppy eyes. Stanley isn't very smart. Grandpa Kurt always says that Stanley isn't working with a full 100 watts. Is that how much a light bulb is? Aren't light bulbs usually like 90 watts or 120? Or if you're using some sweet, sweet LED lights, like half a watt, yeah. Heal the world. Install LED light bulbs in your place. But Mark and I really like him. He has a quiet sense of humor. And he is kind and gentle and friendly. And always has lots of amazing things to show us whenever we visit the farm. "You look nice, Jody," Stanley said, his cheeks turning as red as his ears. "How old are you now?" 12, I told him, creeped out. "And Mark is 11. He thought about it. That makes 23, he joked. We both laughed at the retarded person like terrible human beings. "You never know what Stanley's gonna say." "I think I stepped in something gross," Mark complained, catching up to us. "I always know what Mark is going to say. My brother only knows three words. Cool, weird, and gross. Really, that's his whole vocabulary." As a joke, I gave him a dictionary for his birthday. "You're weird," Mark said when I handed it to him. "That, what a gross gift." He's so stupid. He scraped his white high tops on the ground as we followed Stanley to the beat-up red pickup truck, like in every shitty country music video. "Carry my backpack for me," Mark said, trying to shove the bulging backpack at me. "No way," I told him. "Carry it yourself, goddammit." The backpack contained his Walkman, about 30 tapes, comic books, his Game Boy, and at least 50 game cartridges. Wow, they're rich. weren't tapes like $12 a piece and Game Boy games like 30? I knew he planned to spend the whole month laying on the hammock on the screened-in back porch of the farmhouse, listening to music and playing video games. That doesn't sound so bad. Well, no way. Mom and Dad said it was my job to make sure Mark got outside and enjoyed the farm. We were so cooped up in the city all year. That's why they sent us to visit Grandpa Kurt and Grandma Miriam for a month each summer to enjoy the great outdoors. We stopped beside the truck while Stanley searched his overall pockets for the key. "It's gonna be pretty hot today," Stanley said. "Unless it cools down." A typical Stanley weather report. Oh, he's like Carl Pilkington. I gazed out at a wide, grassy field beyond the small train station parking lot. Thousands of tiny white puffballs bloated up against the clear blue sky. Wait, they get the mentally handicapped farm worker, who we've all learned from tons of movies is always a stand-up guy, to pick up kids at a train station, which is like the number one hotspot for molestation? What terrible parents. I gazed out the wide, grassy field beyond the small train station parking lot. Thousands of tiny white puffballs floated up against the clear blue sky. It was so beautiful. Naturally, I sneezed. I love visiting my grandparents' farm. My only problem is I'm allergic to just about everything on it. My mom packed several bottles of my allergy medicine for me, and I took all of it on the train and got fucked up. Gesundheit, Stanley said. He tossed our two suitcases in the back of the pickup. Mark slid his backpack in, too. Can I ride in back? He asked. He loves to lie flat in the back, staring up at the sky and bumping down and up and down and up really hard. Stanley is a terrible driver. He can't seem to concentrate on steering and driving at the right speed at the right time. So, there's always a lot of quick turns and heavy bumps. Mark lifted himself into the back of the pickup and stretched out next to the suitcases. I climbed beside Stanley in the front. A short while later, we were bouncing along a narrow, twisting road that led to the farm. I stared out the dusty window at the passing meadows and farmhouses. Everything looked so green and alive. Stanley drove with both hands wrapped tightly around the top of the steering wheel. He sat forward stiffly, leaning over the wheel, staring straight ahead through the windshield without blinking. That can't be good for his eyes. Mr. Mortimer doesn't farm his place anymore, he said, lifting one hand from the wheel to point to a big white farmhouse on top of a sloping green hill. Why not? I asked. Because he died, Stanley replied solemnly. See what I mean? You never know what that Riri's going to say. I feel like I'm doubling down on Riri because I was just listening to Pod Gods where Sarah Bieber was talking about her new podcast and how she got hate mail immediately for saying someone could have possibly been autistic. And I hate the kind of people that would send a message like that, so I feel like I should just quadruple down on the jokes that usually get mentions like that. So, I don't know, let's just assume Stanley's autistic. No, that's rude. But, what the fuck? What is wrong with people? Everyone needs to chill out. Have a cocktail. I'm drinking a vodka and Diet Hansen's. We bounced over a deep rut in the road. I was sure Mark was having a great time in back. The road leads through a small town. So small it doesn't even have a name. The farmers here always call it Town. That's Town, with a capital T. It has a feed store, a combination gas station and grocery store, a white steeple church, a hardware store, a meth lab, and a mailbox. There were two trucks parked in front of the feed store. I didn't see anyone as we barreled past. My grandparents' farm is about 2 miles from town. I recognized the cornfields as we approached. The corn is so high already, I exclaimed, staring through the bouncing window. Have you eaten any yet? Just at dinner, Stanley replied. Suddenly, he slowed the truck and turned his eyes to me. The scarecrow walks at midnight, he uttered in a low voice. Huh? I wasn't sure I heard correctly. The scarecrow walks at midnight, he repeated, training his big puppy dog eyes on me. I read it in the book. I didn't know what to say, so I laughed. I thought maybe he was making a joke. Days later, I realized it was no joke. Why does every Goosebumps book have incredibly long chapters at the beginning? Speaking of chapters, this one's too Watching the farm spread out in front of us filled me with happiness, just like abusing my allergy medication. It's not a big farm or a fancy farm, but I like everything about it. I like the barn with its sweet smells of cow shit. I like the low, mooing sounds of the cows way off in the pasture shitting. I like to watch the tall stalks of corn, all fertilized by cow shit, all swaying in the wind. Corny, ha! Huh? It really says that. I didn't make that terrible joke. That's a whole sentence. Corny, comma, huh. Motherfucker. I also like the scary ghost stories Grandpa Kurt tells us at night in front of the fireplace. And I have to include Grandma Miriam's chocolate chip pancakes. They're so good. I sometimes dream about them back home in the city. I always like the happy expression on my grandparents' faces when we come rushing up to greet them. Of course, I was the first one out that goddamn truck. Mark was slow as usual. I went running up to the screen porch in back of their big old farmhouse. I couldn't wait to see my grandparents. Grandma Miriam came waddling out. It actually says that as well. Her arms outstretched. The screen door slammed behind her. But then I saw Grandpa Kurt push it open and he hurried out too. His limp was worse. I noticed right away. He leaned heavily on a white cane like a pimp. He'd never needed one before. I didn't have time to think about it, as Mark and I were smothered in hugs. "So good to see you! It's been so long!" Grandma Miriam cried happily. There were the usual comments about how much taller we were and how grown up we look. "Jody, where'd you get that blonde hair?" There aren't any blondes in my family," Grandpa Kurt insinuated that my mom was whoring around, shaking his mane of white hair. "You must get that from your father's side." "No, I know. I bet you got it from the store," he said, grinning. It was his little joke. It was a terrible joke. He greeted me with it every summer. And really? What a hack. And his big blue eyes would sparkle excitedly. "You're right. It's a wig," I told him, laughing. He gave my long blonde hair a playful tug. "Do you get cable yet?" Mark asked, dragging his backpack along the ground. "Cable TV?" Grandpa Kurt stared hard at Mark. "Not yet. But we still get 3 channels. How many more do we need?" Mark rolled his eyes. "No MTV? What?" he groaned. Stanley made his way past us, carrying our suitcases into the house.
"Let's go in. I bet you're starving," Grandma Miriam said. "I made soup and sandwiches. We'll have chicken and corn tonight. The corn is very sweet this year. I know how you too love it."
I watched my grandparents as they led their way to the house. They both looked older to me, because time had passed and I'm an idiot. They moved more slowly than I remembered. Grandpa Kurt's limp was definitely worst. They both seemed so tired. Grandma Miriam is short and chubby. She has a round face surrounded by curly red hair. Bright red. There's no way to describe the color. I think bright red did a good job, asshole. I don't know what she uses to dye it, that color. I've never seen it on anyone else. She wears square-shaped eyeglasses that give her a really old-fashioned look. She likes big, roomy house dresses. I don't think I've ever seen her in jeans or pants. Grandpa Kurt is tall and broad shoulders. Mom says he was really handsome when he was young.
"Like a movie star," she always tells me. "I have no idea how he got hooked up with that fat cow. Up top, daughter."
And then we high-five, like mothers and daughters do, I assume. Now, he has wavy white hair, still very thick, that he wets and slicks down flat on his head. He has sparkling blue eyes that always make me smile, and a white stubble over his slender face. Grandpa Kurt doesn't like to shave, and neither does Dune. Today he was wearing a long-sleeved red and green plaid shirt, buttoned to the collar despite the hot day, and baggy jeans. Wait, is her grandpa a cholo? Stained at one knee, held up by white suspenders. I guess not. Lunch was fun! We sat around the long kitchen table. Sunlight poured in through the big window. I could see the barn in back of the cornfields. And the cornfield stretched behind it. Mark and I told all our news about school, about my basketball team going to the championships, about our new car, about Dad leaving us, about Dad's mustache growing. I don't know why I added the leaving us. It wasn't even funny. For some reason, Stanley thought that was very funny, unlike the leaving us comment I previously made. He was laughing so hard he choked on his split pea soup. And Grandpa Kurt died. Oh, sorry, and Grandpa Kurt was not choking. Stanley was, and no one died. Grandpa Kurt just had to reach over and slap him on the back. It's hard to know what will crack Stanley up. As Mark would say, Stanley is definitely weird. All through lunch, I kept staring at my grandparents. I couldn't get over how much they had changed in 1 year. It might have been all the tattoos and piercings. They seemed so much quieter, so much slower. Maybe they were on the dope. That's what it means to get older, I told myself. Stanley will have to show you his scarecrows, Grandma Miriam said, passing the bowl of potato chips. Won't you, Stanley? Grandpa Kurt cleared his throat loudly. I had the feeling he was telling Grandma Miriam to change the subject or some shit. I made them, Stanley said, grinning proudly. He turned his big eyes on me. The book. It told me how. Necronomicon Ex Mortis. Are you still taking guitar lessons? Grandpa Kurt asked Mark. I could see that for some reason Grandpa Kurt did not want to talk about any of Stanley's scarecrows. Yeah, Mark answered with a mouthful of potato chips. But I sold my acoustic and switched to electric. It's pretty tough. You mean you have to plug it in? Stanley asked. He started to giggle, as if he had just cracked a funny joke. What a shame you didn't bring your guitar, Grandma Miriam said to Mark. No, it isn't, I teased. The cows would start giving sour milk. Shut the fuck up, Jody, Mark snapped. He has no sense of humor. They already do give sour milk, Grandpa Kurt muttered, lowering his eyes. Bad luck. When cows give sour milk, it means bad luck, Stanley declared, his eyes widening, his expression suddenly fearful. It's okay, Stanley, Grandma Miriam assured him, quickly placing a gentle hand on his shoulder. Grandpa Kurt is only teasing. Franklin is next to me. Oh, now he's looking up because I said his name, and he's using his teeth and paws to completely reorganize his little dog bed, and it's adorable. Also, he's feeling great, so just a scare last week. Grandma Miriam started... Sorry. If you kids are finished, why not go with Stanley? Grandpa Kurt said. He'll give you a tour of the farm. You always enjoyed that. He sighed. I'd go along, but my leg, it's been acting up again. Grandma Miriam started to clear the dishes. Mark and I followed Stanley out the back door, and he followed right into our back doors. The grass in the backyard had recently been mowed. The air was heavy with the sweet smell. I saw a hummingbird fluttering over the flower garden beside the house. I pointed it out to Mark, but by the time he turned, it had hummed away! Hummingbirds, you know? Not dependable. At the back of the long green yard stood the old barn. Its white walls were badly stained and peeling. Seems like a job for Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer or one of those assholes. It needed a paint job. The doors were open, and I could see square bales of straw inside. Far to the right of the barn, almost to the cornfields, stood the small guest house where Stanley lived with his teenage son, Styx. Stanley, where's Styx? I asked. Why wasn't he at lunch? Went to town. Stanley said in Grandpa Kurt's voice for some reason, quietly. Went to town, riding on a pony. Mark and I exchanged glances. We could never figure Stanley out. Poking up from the cornfield stood several dark figures, the scarecrows Grandma Miriam had talked about. I stared out at them, shielding my eyes from the sun with one hand. So many scarecrows, I exclaimed. Stanley, last summer there was only one. Why so many now? He didn't reply. He didn't seem to hear me. He had a black baseball cap pulled down over his forehead. He was taking long strides, leaning forward with that stork-like walk of his hands shoved into the pockets of his baggy denim overalls. We've seen the farm 100 times, Mark complained, whispering to me. Why do we have to take the grand tour again? Mark, cool your jets, I told him. We always take a tour of the farm. It's tradition. Mark grumbled to himself. He is really lazy. He never wants to do anything. Stanley led the way past the barn into the cornfields. The stalks were way over my head. Their golden tassels gleamed in the bright sunlight. Stanley reached up and pulled an ear off the stalk. Let's see if it's ready, he said, grinning at Mark and me. He held the ear to his left hand and started to shuck it with his right. After a few seconds, he pulled the husk away, revealing the ear of corn inside. I stared at it and let out a horrified cry.
Chapter 3.
Ah, it's disgusting, I shrieked. Gross, I heard Mark groan. The corn was a disgusting brown color, and it was moving on the cob, wiggling and squirming. Ah, fucking gross, listeners. Stanley raised the corn to his face to examine it, and realized it was covered with worms. Hundreds of wriggling brown worms. No! Stanley cried out in horror. He let the ear of corn drop to the ground at his feet. That's bad luck. The book says so. That's very bad luck. I stared down at the ear of corn. The worms were wriggling off the cob onto the dirt. It's okay, Stanley, I told him. I only screamed because I was surprised. That happens sometimes. Sometimes worms get into corn. Grandpa told me. No. It's bad, Stanley insisted in a trembling voice. His red ears were aflame. His big eyes revealed his fear. The book. It says so. What book? Mark demanded. He kicked up the wormy ear of corn. He kicked the corn and shit, and it went away, and the toe of his shoe. He got his kicks, and he kicked the corn. That's what he did with the corn. My book, Stanley said mysteriously. My superstition book. Oh, shit, I thought. Stanley shouldn't have a book about superstitions. He was already the most superstitious person in the world, even without a book. Wait, is he just talking about the Bible? You've been reading a book about superstitions? Mark asked him, watching the brown worms crawl over the soft dirt. Yes, Stanley nodded his head enthusiastically. It's a good book. It tells me everything. And it's all true. All of it! God hates fags, he added. He pulled off his cap and stretched his stubby hair. And scratched it. He didn't stretch it. Hair doesn't stretch. I think there's a Barbie that had stretchy hair, but this is not that. It's not like a koosh ball. I've got to check the book. I've got to see what it's to do about the corn. The bad corn. That's the corn with the backwards R. That's the bad corn. He was getting pretty worked up. It was making me feel a little scared. I've known Stanley my whole life. I think he's worked for Grandpa Kurt for more than 20 years. He's always been strange, but I've never seen him get so upset about something as unimportant as a bad ear of corn. Show us the scarecrows, I said, trying to get his mind off the corn. Yeah, let's see him, Mark joined in. Okay. The scarecrows, Stanley nodded. Then he turned, still thinking hard, and began leading the way through the tall rows of corn stalks that looked like riffraff's hair. The stalks creaked and groaned as we passed them by. It was kind of an eerie sound. Suddenly, a shadow fell over me. One of the dark scarecrows rose up in front of us. It wore a tattered black coat stuffed with straw. Its arms stretched stiffly out at its side. The scarecrow was tall, towering over my head, tall enough to stand over the high corn stalks. He was fucking tall as shit, readers or listeners and stuff, so he was huge, huge. Its head had a faded burlap bag filled with straw. Evil black eyes and a menacing frown had been painted on thickly with black paint. A battered old-fashioned hat rested on its head. You made these? I asked Stanley. I could see several other scarecrows poking up from the corn. They all stood in the same stiff position like Jesus Christ. They all had the same menacing frown. He stared up the scarecrow's face. I made them, he said in a low voice. The book showed me how. It would be funny if the book was like one of those shitty 90s klutz books, like Scarecrows for the Total Klutz. They're pretty scary looking, Mark said, standing close beside me. He grabbed the scarecrow's straw hand and shook it. What up? Mark asked it. The scarecrow walks at midnight, Stanley said, repeating the phrase he'd used in the train station. Mark was trying to slap the scarecrow a high five. What does that mean? I asked Stanley. The book told me how, Stanley replied, keeping his eyes on the dark painted face on the burlap bag. The book told me how to make them walk. Huh? You mean you can make the scarecrows walk? I asked very stupidly and very confused. Stanley's dark eyes locked on mine. Once again, he got that very solemn expression on his face. I know how to do it. The book has all the words. I stared back at him, totally confused. I didn't know what to say. I made them walk, Jody. Stanley continued in a voice just above a whisper. I made them walk last week, and now I'm the boss.
Huh? The boss of the scarecrows? I stammered. Do you mean?
I stopped when, out of the corner of my eye, I saw the scarecrow's arm move. The straw crinkled as the arm slid up. Then I felt rough straw brush against my face as the dry scarecrow arm moved to my throat.
Chapter 4.
The prickly straw poking out of the sleeve of the black coat scraped against my neck. I let out a shrill scream.
Ah!
It's alive!
I cried in panic, diving to the ground, scrambling away on all fours. I turned back to see Mark and Stanley calmly watching me. Hadn't they seen the scarecrow try to choke me? Then Stanley's son Styx stepped out from behind the scarecrow, a gleeful grin on his stupid fucking face.
Styx, you creep!
I cried angrily. I knew at once he had moved the scarecrow's arm.
Y'all city kids sure scare easy,
Styx said, his grin growing wider. He reached down to my feet, reached down to help me to my feet. He didn't just go for the feet like Quentin Tarantino.
You really thought that there scarecrow moved, didn't you, Jody?
He said, accusing me. I can make the scarecrows move, Stanley said redundantly, pulling the cap down lower on his forehead. I can make them walk. I did it. It's all in the book. Styx's smile faded. The light seemed to dim from his dark eyes.
Yeah, sure, Dad, he murmured.
Styx is 16. 16! He is tall and lanky. He has long, skinny arms and legs. That's how he got the nickname Styx. He tries to look tough. He has long black hair down past his collar, which he seldom washes. He wears tight muscle shirts and dirty ripped jeans. He sneers a lot, and his dark eyes always seem to be laughing at you. Oh my goodness. He calls Mark and me the city kids. He always says it with a sneer, and he's always playing stupid jokes on us.
You motherfuckers and your literacy.
I think he's kind of jealous of Mark and me. I don't think it's been easy for Styx to grow up on the farm, living in the little guest house with his dad. I mean, Stanley's more of a kid than a father.
I saw you back there, Mark told Styx.
Well, thanks for warning me,
I snapped at Mark like a little bitch. I turned back angrily to Styx.
I see you haven't changed at all.
Great to see you too, Jody,
he replied sarcastically.
The city kids are back for another month with the Hicks.
Styx, what's your problem? I shot back. Be nice, Stanley muttered. The corn has ears, you know. We all stared at Stanley. Had he just made a joke? It was so hard to tell with him. Stanley's face remained serious. His big eyes stared out at me through the shade of his cap. The corn has ears, he repeated.
There are spirits in the field.
Styx shook his head unhappily.
Dad, you spend too much time with that superstition book, he muttered.
The book is all true, Stanley replied. It's all true.
Oh my goodness, oh my gracious, having fun and reading pages. Styx kicked at the dirt. He raised his eyes to me. His expression seemed very sad.
Things are different here, he muttered.
Huh? I didn't understand. What do you mean? Styx turned to his father. Stanley was staring back at him, his eyes narrowed. Styx shrugged and didn't reply. He grabbed Mark's arm and squeezed it.
Boy, you're as flabby as ever, he told Mark. Want to throw a football around this here afternoon? Do you want to throw a football, fatty fat shit?
It's kind of hot,
Mark replied. He wiped the sweat off his forehead with the back of his hand. Styx sneered at him.
Still a wimp, huh?
No way, Mark protested. It's just that it's hot. Jesus, that's all.
Hey, you got something on your back,
Styx told Mark.
Turn around!
Mark obeyed immediately, for some reason. Styx bent down, picked up the wobbly corn cob, the wormy corn cob, and stuffed it down the back of Mark's t-shirt. That's fucking gross and wrong. I don't like this. I had to laugh as I watched my brother run screaming all the way back to the farmhouse.
Cocktail pause.
Dinner was quiet. Grandma Miriam's fried chicken was as tasty as ever, and stereotypical as shit. She was right about the corn. It was very sweet. Mark and I ate two ears, dripping with butter. I enjoyed the dinner, but it upset me that both of my grandparents seemed so changed. Grandpa Kurt used to talk non-stop. He always had dozens of funny stories about the farmers in the area, and he always had new jokes to tell.
Alright, speaking of new jokes, this is about to get very crude if you're going to go forward, kids. Lax Dude of the old Pod Gods podcast has been bothering me about the Camp Jelly Jam episode. And he keeps saying that I missed out on the opportunity of a joke involving jelly and jam, so I need to fill it in right here so he'll be happy with me. So just skip forward. It's not for the young of heart. So, why is jam better than jelly? 'Cause I can't jelly my cock down your throat. Can someone edit crickets in right here? Point is, there you go. You happy, Lax? You're gonna ease off now? You're gonna maybe donate? Eh?
Tonight, he barely said a word. Grandma Miriam kept urging Mark and me to eat more, and she kept asking us how we liked everything. But she, too, seemed quieter. They both seemed tense, uncomfortable. They both kept glancing down the table at Stanley, who was eating with both hands, butter dripping down his chin. Styx ate glumly across from his father. He seemed even more unfriendly than usual. Stanley was the only cheerful person at the table. He chewed his chicken enthusiastically and asked for a third helping of mashed potatoes.
"Is everything okay, Stanley?"
Grandma Miriam kept asking, biting her bottom lip.
"Everything okay?"
Stanley burped and smiled. "Not bad," was his reply. Why do things seem so different, I wondered. Is it just because Grandma and Grandpa are getting older? After dinner, we sat around the big, comfortable living room. Grandpa Kurt rocked gently back and forth in the antique wooden rocking chair by the fireplace, like the ones outside of Cracker Barrel. It was too hot to build a fire, but as he rocked, he stared into the dark fireplace, a thoughtful expression on his white, stubbled face. Grandma Miriam sat in her favorite chair, a big green overstuffed armchair across from Grandpa Kurt. She had an unopened gardening magazine in her lap. Styx, who had barely said two words the whole evening, disappeared. Stanley leaned against the wall, poking his teeth with a toothpick. Mark sank down into the long green couch. I sat down on the other end of it and stared across the room. Holy shit, the last minute of reading was seriously explanations of different chairs and who's sitting in each. Dear God, you needed to get no word count on this one, yes? This chair is brown. It has a patch on one arm. There's some dog hair on it. It's weird. No one has a dog. Grandpa's sitting in it. Sometimes he sits in the old porch chair. It's kind of moldy, but he still enjoys it. Yuck! That stuffed bear still gives me the creeps. I want a stuffed bear. At the far end of the room, an enormous stuffed brown bear, about 8 feet tall, stood straight up on its hind legs. Grandpa Kurt had shot it many years ago on a hunting trip. The bear's huge paws were extended, as if ready to pounce.
"That is the killer bear," Grandpa Kurt remembered, rocking slowly, his eyes on the angry-looking beast.
"He mauled two hunters before I shot him. I saved their lives."
Well, you didn't save them from getting mauled, asshole. I shuddered and turned away from the bear. I really hated it. I don't know why Grandma Miriam let Grandpa Kurt keep it in the living room.
Maybe if you did understand that fact, you'd become a better wife once you get married again, or married someday, Jody. God, it's not all about you.
"How about a scary story?"
I asked Grandpa. "How about a scary story?" I asked Grandpa Kurt. He stared back at me, his blue eyes suddenly lifeless and dull.
"Yeah, we've been looking forward to your stories," Mark chimed in. "Tell us the one about the headless boy in the closet."
"No."
"Tell a new one,"
I insisted eagerly. Sorry, I got distracted trying to make a boy in a closet joke and gave up. Grandpa Kurt rubbed his chin slowly. His eyes went to Stanley across the room. Then he cleared his throat nervously.
"I'm kind of tired, kids," he said softly. "Think I'll just go to bed."
"But no story?"
I protested. He stared back at me with dull eyes.
I don't really know any stories, he murmured.
He slowly climbed to his feet and headed toward his room.
What the fuck is going on here? I asked myself. What is wrong?
Here's my prediction of the plot. The grandparents have been replaced with scarecrows, and the scarecrows in the field are people that Stanley killed. That's what I'm predicting at the end of chapter 4.
Chapter 5. Upstairs in my bedroom later that night, I changed into a long nightshirt. The bedroom window was open and a soft breeze invaded the room. I stared out the open window. A broad apple tree cast its shadow over the lawn. Where the grass ended, the cornfield stretched out under the glow of the full moon. The pale moonlight made the tall stalks shimmer like gold. The stalks cast long blue shadows over the field.
That was very poetic.
Across the wide field, the scarecrows poked up stiffly, like dark uniformed soldiers, their coat sleeves ruffled in the light breeze. Their pale burlap faces seemed to stare back at me. I felt a cold chill run down my back.
Oh, yeah, scoliosis.
So many scarecrows. At least a dozen of them, standing in straight rows, like an army, ready to march.
The scarecrow walks at midnight.
That's what Stanley had said, in that low, frightening tone I had never heard him use before.
It's also the title of the book.
I glanced at the clock on the bed table. Just past 10 o'clock. I'll be asleep by the time they walk, I thought. A crazy thought. I sneered. It seemed like I'm allergic to the farm air, both day and night. I stared at the long shadows cast by the scarecrows. A gust of wind bent the stalks, making the shadows roll forward like a dark ocean wave. And then I saw the scarecrows start to twitch.
Mark! I screamed. Mark! Come here! Hurry!
I'm just going to keep going.
Chapter number 6. Under the light of the full moon, I stared in horror as the dark scarecrows started to move. Their arms jerked up. Their burlap heads lurched forward. All of them in unison. All of the scarecrows were jerking, twitching, and straining as if to pull free of their stakes.
Mark! Hurry! I screamed.
I heard footsteps clomping down the hall. Mark burst breathlessly into my room.
Jody, what is it? He cried.
I motioned frantically for him to come to the window. As he stepped beside me, I pointed to the cornfields.
Look, the scarecrows.
He gripped the windowsill and leaned out the window. Over his shoulder, I could see the scarecrows twitch in unison as Dune got a text. A cold shudder made me wrap my arms around myself.
It's the wind, Mark said, stepping back from the window.
What's your problem, Jody? It's just the wind blowing them around.
You're wrong, Mark, I stammered, still hugging myself.
Sometimes we all need a hug.
Look again. He rolled his eyes and sighed, but he turned back and leaned out the window. He gazed out the field for a long time.
Don't you see? I demanded shrilly.
They're all moving together.
It's just the thriller. Their arms, their heads, all moving together and doing scarecrow stuff. Thriller!
When Mark pulled back from the window, his blue eyes were wide and fearful. He stared at me thoughtfully and didn't say a word. Finally, he swallowed hard, and his voice came out low and frightened.
We've got to tell Grandpa Kurt, he said.
This is a cocktail break, but I'm out of cocktails, so I gotta get it at the end of this chapter.
We rushed downstairs, but our grandparents had gone to bed. The bedroom door was closed. It was silent on the other side.
Maybe we'd better wait till tomorrow morning, I whispered as Mark and I tiptoed back upstairs to our rooms.
I think we'll be safe until then.
Why would you not immediately tell people about scarecrows that had come to life? I call my mom in the middle of the night and be like, Mom! And she's like, who is this? I'm like, Dune, goddammit! Franklin did the cutest thing, and then she hangs up on me.
We crept back to our rooms. I pushed the window shut and locked it. Out in the fields, the scarecrows were still twitching, still pulling at their stakes. With a shudder, I turned away from the window and plunged into the bed, pulling the old quilt up over my head. I slept restlessly, tossing under the heavy quilt. In the morning, I jumped eagerly from bed. I ran a brush through my hair and hurried down to breakfast. Mark was right behind me on the stairs. He was wearing the same jeans as yesterday, and a red and black Nirvana t-shirt.
That's funny.
He hadn't bothered to brush his hair. It stood straight up in the back, like girls were doing in the
early 2000s, the punk rock girls, where they're brushing their hair down the floor, then brushing in the back, and they had that weird little poof-up thing that no one really thought was cool.
Pancakes! He managed to choke out like Mitch Hedberg. Mark is only good for one word at a time this early in the morning. But the word instantly cheered me up and made me forget for a moment about the creepy scarecrows. How could I have forgotten about Grandma Miriam's amazing chocolate chip pancakes? They are so soft. They really do melt in your mouth. And the warm chocolate mixed with the sweet maple syrup makes the most delicious breakfast I've ever eaten. As we hurried across the living room toward the kitchen, I sniffed the air, hoping to smell the wonderful aroma of pancake batter on the stove. But my nose was too stuffed up to smell anything. Mark and I burst into the kitchen at the same time. Grandpa Kurt and Stanley were already at the table. A big blue pot of coffee stood steaming in front of them.
Hey, listeners, I'm assuming the pot is blue, not the coffee.
Stanley sipped his coffee. Grandpa Kurt had his face buried behind the morning newspaper. He glanced up and smiled as Mark and I entered. Everyone said good morning to everyone.
That's good.
Mark and I took our places at the table. We were so eager for the famous pancakes, we were practically rubbing our hands together the way cartoon characters do, specifically Mr. Burns. Imagine our shock when Grandma Miriam set down big bowls of fucking cornflakes in front of us. I practically burst into tears because I'm a spoiled bitch. I glanced across the table at Mark. He was staring back at me. His face revealed his surprise and disappointment.
Cornflakes?
He asked in a high-pitched voice. Grandma Miriam had gone back to the sink. I turned to her.
Grandma Miriam, no pancakes?
I asked meekly. I saw her glance at Stanley.
I've stopped making them, Jody, she replied, her eyes still on Stanley. Pancakes are too fattening.
Nothing like a good bowl of cornflakes in the morning, Stanley said, with a big smile. He reached for the cornflakes box in the center of the table and filled his bowl with a second helping. Grandpa Kurt grunted behind his newspaper.
Go ahead, eat them before they get soggy, Grandma Miriam urged from the sink.
Mark and I just stared at each other. Last summer, Grandma Miriam had made us a big old stack of chocolate chip pancakes almost every morning.
What is going on here?
I wondered once again. I suddenly remembered Styx out in the cornfield the day before, whispering to me,
things are different here.
They sure were different, and not for the better, I decided. My stomach grumbled. I picked up the spoon and started to eat my cornflakes. I saw Mark glumly spooning his.
I don't think spooning is the verb that he thinks it is. That's like a cuddling thing. Is Mark awkwardly rubbing a boner into the back of the spoon?
And then I suddenly remember the twitching scarecrows. Grandpa Kurt, I started. Last night, Mark and I, we were looking out the cornfields, and we saw the scarecrows. They were moving. I heard Grandma Miriam utter a low gasp from behind me. Grandpa Kurt lowered his paper. He narrowed his eyes at me, but didn't say a word.
The scarecrows were moving!
Mark chimed in. Stanley chuckled.
It was the wind, he said, his eyes on Grandpa Kurt. It had to be the wind blowing them around.
Grandpa Kurt stared at Stanley.
You sure? He demanded.
Yeah, it was the wind, Stanley replied tensely.
But they were trying to get off the poles, I cried. You know, like strippers that finally got off meth and they just need enough money to support their kid and they want to get off the pole, but they can't. We saw them.
Grandpa Kurt stared hard at Stanley. Stanley's ears turned bright red. He lowered his eyes.
It was a breezy night, he said. They move in the wind. "It's going to be a sunny day," Grandma Miriam said brightly from the sink. "But the scarecrows?" Mark insisted.
"Yep, looks like a real pretty day," Grandpa Kurt mumbled, ignoring Mark.
"He doesn't want to talk about the scarecrows," I realized. "Is it because he doesn't believe us?" "No, idiots, because some shit's going down. Obviously, it's an R.L. Stein book and you're in it, bitch. Break the fourth wall. Be Deadpool." Grandpa Kurt turned to Stanley. "After you take the cows to pasture, maybe you and Jody and Mark can do some fishing in the creek."
"Maybe," Stanley replied, studying the box of cornflakes.
"Maybe we could do just that."
"Sounds like fun," Mark said. "Mark likes fishing. It's one of his favorite sports. Because you don't have to move much and he's a fat shit."
There's a really pretty creek behind the cow pasture at the far end of Grandpa Kurt's property. It's very woodsy back there, and the narrow creek trickles softly beneath the old shade trees and is usually filled with fish. Finishing my cereal, I turned to Grandma Miriam at the sink.
"And what are you doing today?" I asked her. "Maybe you and I could spend some time together, and..."
I stopped as she turned toward me. Her hand came into view.
"Oh!" I let out a frightened moan when I saw her hand. "It was made..."
"You guys, you ready for it?" "I'm ready."
"Of straw!"
Chapter number 7, which some people find lucky, and some people like me don't really subscribe to the concept of luck.
"Jody, what's the matter?" Grandma Miriam asked.
I started to point to her hand. Then it came into sharp focus, and I saw that her hand wasn't straw. God damn it. She was holding a broom. She had gripped it by the handle and was pulling lint off the ends of the straw.
"Nothing's wrong," I told her, feeling like a total jerk, just like Dune is for making the assumption that everyone was supposed to make, and then feeling like an asshole when clearly that you're not supposed to do that, and it's obviously a twist.
I rubbed my eyes. "I've got to take my allergy medicine," I told her. "My eyes are so watery. I keep seeing things." I was seeing scarecrows everywhere I looked. I scolded myself for acting so crazy.
"Stop thinking about scarecrows," I told myself.
Stanley was right. The scarecrows had moved in the wind last night. It was just the wind.
This is one of his weird pauses where he puts three asterisks in the middle. So I will read it as is.
"It was just the wind. Butthole, butthole, butthole." Stanley took us fishing later that morning. As we stared off for the creek, as we started off for the creek, he seemed in a really cheerful mood. He smiled as he swung the big picnic basket Grandma Miriam had packed for our lunch.
"She put in all my favorites," Stanley said happily.
He patted the basket with childish satisfaction. He had three bamboo fishing poles tucked under his left arm. He carried the big straw basket in his right hand. He refused to let Mark and me carry anything.
The warm air smelled so sweet. The sun beamed down in a cloudless blue sky. Blades of recently cut grass stuck to my white sneakers as we headed across the backyard. The medicine had helped.
Just like my medicine. I got a new cocktail.
My eyes were much better. Stanley turned just past the barn and began walking quickly along its back wall. His expression seemed solemn. He appeared to be concentrating hard on something.
"Hey, where are we going?" I called, hurrying up to him.
He didn't seem to hear me. Taking long strides, swinging the straw picnic basket as he walked, he headed back in the direction we started from.
"Hey, wait up!" Mark called breathlessly.
My brother hates to hurry when he can take his time.
Because he's fat.
"Stanley, wait!"
I cried, tugging his shirtless sleeve. His shirt sleeve.
Why did I say shirtless?
"We're going around in circles!"
He nodded, his expression serious under the black baseball cap.
We have to circle the barn 3 times, he said in a low voice.
"Huh? Why?"
I demanded. We started our second turn around the barn.
"It will bring us good luck with our fishing," Stanley replied. Then he added, "It's in the book. Everything is in the book."
Except for how to score a lady, am I right? Up top. How you doing, Connie? That's my girlfriend. I opened my mouth to tell him that this was really silly, but I decided not to. He seemed so serious about that superstition book of his. I didn't want to spoil it for him. Besides, Mark and I could use the exercise. Especially Mark. A short while later, we finished circling and started walking along the dirt path that led past the cornfields to the creek. Stanley's smile returned immediately. He really believes in that superstitious book, I realized. I wondered if Styx believes them too. Where's Styx? I asked, kicking the big lump of dirt across the path.
Doing chores, Stanley replied. Styx is a good worker. A real good worker.
But he'll be along soon, I bet. Styx never likes to miss out on a fishing trip. The sun began to feel really strong on my face and on my shoulders. I wondered if I should run back and get some sunblack. The dark-suited scarecrow appeared to stare at me as we walked past the tall rows of cornstalks. I could swear their pale, painted faces turned to follow me as we went by. And I did. And did one of them lift its arm to wave a straw hand at me? I scolded myself for such stupid thoughts and turned my eyes away. Stop thinking about the scarecrows, Jody, I told myself. Forget your bad dream. Forget about the dumb scarecrows. It's a beautiful day and you have nothing to worry about. Try to relax and have a good time. Record some goosebumps. Have a cocktail. YOLO. The path led into tall pine woods behind the cornfields. It got shady and much cooler as we stepped into the woods. Can't we take a taxi the rest of the way? Mark whined. A typical Mark joke. He really would take a taxi if there was one. Stanley shook his head.
City kids, he muttered, grinning.
The path ended, and we continued through the trees. It smelled so piney and fresh in the woods. It's like each tree had an individual little air freshener from the cars with the trees. God damn it, I fucking ruined it. The joke I was going to make is that each tree had a little air freshener, and it's funny because the trees are the smell that the air freshener's trying to mimic, but it's not that funny, and it's just fucking ruined, and it's over. I'm just done with this joke. I saw a tiny brown and white chipmunk dart into a hollow log, most likely to solve a mystery. Sometimes, some crimes. There's no case too big, no case too small. If you need help, just call Chip 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 and Dale Rescue Rangers. Chip 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 and Dale Rescue Rangers. I'm gonna let that sink in for a little bit. In the near distance, I could hear the musical trickling of the creek. Suddenly, Stanley stopped. He bent and picked up a pine cone. The three fishing poles fell to the ground. He didn't seem to notice. He held the pine cone close to his face, studying it. A pine cone on the shady side means a long winter, he said, turning the dry cone in his hand. Mark and I bent to pick up the poles. Is that what the book says? Mark asked. Stanley nodded. He set the pine cone down carefully where he found it. The cone is still sticky. That's a good sign, he said seriously. Mark let out a giggle. I knew he was trying not to laugh at Stanley, but the giggle escaped somehow. Stanley's big brown eyes filled with hurt. It's all true, Mark, he said quietly. It's all true. I'd like to read that book, Mark said, glancing at me. It's a very hard book, Stanley replied. I have trouble with some of the words. You and me both, Stanley. I can hear the creek, I broke in, changing the subject. Let's go. I want to catch some fish before lunchtime.
Cocktail break.
Once again, the cocktail break is when there's like a double space. Like it means time has passed and that it's later on. The clear water felt cold against my legs. The smooth rocks of the creek bed were slippery under my bare feet. All three of us waded into the shallow creek. Mark had wanted to be down on the grassy shore to fish, but I convinced him it was much more fun and much easier to catch something if you stand in the water, which is absolute bullshit. Yeah, I'll catch something, he grumbled as he rolled up the cuffs of his jeans. I'll catch pneumonia! Stanley let out a loud laugh. It sounded like, har, har, har. I set the big picnic basket down carefully on the dry grass. Then he rolled up. He did that. I didn't do shit. Then he rolled up the legs of his denim overalls. Carrying a pole in one hand, he stepped into the water.
"Oh, it's cold," he cried, waving his arms above his head, nearly losing his balance on the slippery rocks.
"Stanley, didn't you forget something?"
I called to him. He turned confused. His big ears became bright red.
"What did I forget, Jody?"
I pointed to his fishing pole. "How about some bait?" I called. He glanced at the empty hook at the end of his line. Then he made his way back to the shore to get a worm to bait his hook, just like at the beginning of, is it Return of the King, where it has Smeagol and Deagle? Yeah. A few minutes later, all three of us were in the water. Mark complained at first about how cold it was, about how the rocks on the bottom hurt his delicate little feet. But after a while, he got into it too. The creek at this point was only about 2 feet deep. The water was very clear and trickled rapidly, making little swirls and dips over the rocky bottom. I lowered my line into the water and watched the red plastic float bob on the surface. If it started to sink, I'd know I had a bite. The sun felt warm on my face. The cool water flowed past pleasantly. I wish it were deep enough to swim here, I thought. "Hey, I've got something," Mark cried excitedly. Stanley and I turned to watch him tug up his line. Mark pulled with all his might. It's a big one, I think," he said. Finally, he let out one last hard tug and pulled up a thick clump of green weeds. "Aw, that's hecka tight. Let's get 420'd," I said, rolling my eyes. "It's a big one, all right." "You're a big one," Mark shot back. "A big jerk fag."
"Don't be such a baby," I muttered. I brushed away a buzzing horsefly and tried to concentrate on my line, but my mind started to wander. It always does when I'm fishing. I found myself thinking about the tall scarecrows in the field. They stood so darkly, so menacingly, so alert. Their painted faces all had the same hard stare. I was still picturing them when I felt the hand slip around my ankle. The straw scarecrow hand. It reached up from the water, circled my ankle, and started to tighten its cold, wet grip around my leg.
I wonder what bullshit excuse there's gonna be for another suspenseful end to a chapter.
Chapter 8. I screamed and tried to kick the hand away, but my feet slipped on the smooth rocks. My hand shot up as I toppled backwards. "Ow!" I cried out as I hit the water.
Here's my splash sound. Splash. Doesn't work well with ice.
The scarecrow hung on my back. The water rushed over me. I kicked and thrashed my arms, and then I saw it. The clump of green weeds that had wrapped itself around my ankle.
"Oh, no," I moaned out loud, as Dune would have done if it didn't say that anyway.
"No, scarecrow, only weeds. Hey, maybe if you laid off those weeds, you wouldn't see any scarecrows. Switch to booze. That's my advice to the kids." I lowered my foot to the water. I didn't move. I just laid there on my back, waiting for my heart to stop pounding, feeling once again like a total jerk. I glanced up at Mark and Stanley. They were staring down at me, too startled to laugh. "Don't say a word," I warned them, struggling to my feet. "I'm warning you. Don't say a word." Mark snickered like a doodle, but he obediently didn't say anything.
"I didn't bring a towel," Stanley said with concern, and obviously being a terrible intergalactic hitchhiker.
"I'm sorry, Jody. I didn't know you wanted to swim." That made Mark bust out in loud guffaws. I shot Mark a warning stare. My t-shirt and shorts were soaked. I started to shore, carrying the pole awkwardly in front of me.
"I don't need a towel," I told Stanley. "It feels good. Very refreshing."
"You scared away all the fish, Jody," Mark complained.
"No, you scared them away. They saw your face."
"Good stuff," I replied. I knew I was acting like a baby now, but I didn't give a shit. I was cold and wet and angry. I stomped onto the shore, shaking water from my hair.
"I think they're biting better down here," I heard Stanley call to Mark. I turned to see them disappear around a curve of the creek. Stepping carefully over the rocks, Mark followed after him. They were both hidden from view behind thick trees. I squeezed my hair, trying to get the creek water out. Finally, I gave up and tossed my hair behind my shoulder. I was debating what to do next when I heard a crackling sound in the woods.
A footstep? I turned and stared near the trees.
I didn't see anyone.
A chipmunk scurried away over the blanket of dead brown leaves. Had someone or something frightened the chipmunk?
Maybe he was frightened by my rendition of the Chippendale Rescue Rangers theme song. I'll bring out another one, too.
Not ponytails or cottontails, just ducktails. Oh, woo! I listened hard. Another crackling footstep, rustling sounds. Every day they're rustling. Who's there? I called. The low bushes rustled in reply. Styx? Is that you? Styx? My voice trembled. No reply. It has to be Styx. It obviously has to be Styx because Styx come from trees. Good one, Dune. This is my Grandpa Kurt's property. No one else would be back here. Styx, stop trying to scare me, I shouted angrily. No reply. Another footstep. The crack of a twig. More rustling sounds. Closer now. Styx, I know it's you, I called uncertainly. I'm really tired of your dumb tricks, Styx. My eyes stared straight ahead into the trees. I listened. Silence now. Heavy silence. Morbidly obese silence. And then... God, the cat just moved and scared the shit out of me. And then I raised my hand to my mouth as I saw the dark figure poke out from the shade of two tall pines. Styx? I squinted into the deep blue shadows. I saw the bulging dark coat, the faded burlap head, the dark fedora hat that tilted over the black painted eyes. I saw the straw poking out under the jacket, the straw sticking out from the long jacket sleeves. A scarecrow. A scarecrow that had followed us. Followed us to the creek? Squinting hard into the shadows, staring at its evil, frozen grin, I opened my mouth to scream, but no sound came out.
This is the 9th motherfucking chapter, yeah.
And then a hand grabbed my shoulder. Oh! I let out a cry and spun around. Stanley stared at me with concern. He and Mark had come up behind me.
Jody, what's the matter? Stanley asked.
Mark and I, we thought we heard you calling.
Wait, why'd I deliver that so weird?
Jody, what's the matter? Stanley asked. Mark and I, we thought we heard you calling. What's up? Mark asked casually. The line on his fishing pole had become tangled, and he was working to untangle it. Did you see a squirrel or something?
No, I...
My heart was pounding so hard I could barely speak. Cool your jets, Jody, Mark said, imitating me. I saw a scarecrow, I managed to scream. Stanley's mouth dropped open. Mark narrowed his eyes suspiciously at me. A scarecrow here in the woods? It was walking, I stammered. I heard it walking. A choking sound escaped Stanley's open mouth. Mark continued to stare at me, but his features were tight with fear. It's over there, I cried. Right there, look! I pointed. But it was gone.
That's why you don't trust people, you know? Fool me once with the scarecrow shit, then if you fool me again, fuck you.
Chapter 10.
Yeah, I sung it.
Stanley stared hard at me, his big brown eyes filled with confusion. I saw it, I insisted. Between those two trees! I pointed again, as Dune unnecessarily pointed to the corner of the room where there's an Elvira stand-up.
You did? A scarecrow?
Really? Stanley asked. I could see he was really starting to get scared.
Well, maybe it was just the shadows? I said.
I didn't want to frighten Stanley. I shivered. I'm soaked. I gotta get back to the sunlight, I told them.
But did you see it? Stanley asked, his big eyes locked on mine. Did you see a scarecrow here, Jody?
I don't think so, Stanley, I replied, trying to calm down. I'm sorry. This is very bad, he murmured, talking to himself. This is very bad. I have to read the book. This is very bad. Then, muttering to himself, he turned and ran. Stanley, stop! I called. Stanley, come back. Don't leave us here. But he was gone. Vanished into the woods. He vanquished himself, but he did vanish. I'm going after him, I told Mark. And I'm going to tell Grandpa Kurt about this. Can you carry back the fishing poles by yourself?
Do I have to?
Mark whined. My brother is so lazy. I told him he had to. Then
I went running along the path through the woods toward the farmhouse. My heart pounded as I reached the cornfields. The dark-coated scarecrows appeared to stare at me. As my sneakers thudded on the narrow dirt path, I imagined the straw arms reaching for me, reaching to grab me and pull me into the corn. But the scarecrows kept silent. Still watch over the corn stalks? The scarecrows kept silent, still watch over the corn stalks. They didn't move or twitch as I hurtled past. Up ahead, I saw Stanley running to the little house. I cupped my hands over my mouth and called to him, but he disappeared inside. I decided to find Grandpa Kurt and tell him about the scarecrow I saw moving through the woods. The barn door was open. I thought I saw something moving around inside. "Grandpa Kurt!" I called breathlessly. "Are you in there?" My hair bounced on my shoulders as I ran into the barn. I stood into the rectangle of light that stretched from the doorway and stared into the darkness. "Grandpa Kurt!" I called, struggling to catch my breath. My eyes slowly adjusted to the dim light. I stepped deeper into the barn. "Grandpa Kurt, are you here?" Hearing a soft scraping sound against the far wall, I made my way toward it. "Grandpa Kurt, can I talk to you? I really need to talk to you." My voice sounded so tiny and frightened in the big, dark barn. My sneakers scraped over the dry straw floor as I walked toward the back. I spun around as I heard a rumbling sound. The light grew dimmer. "There is a light that never goes out." "Hey," I shouted. Too late, the barn door was sliding shut. "Hey, who's there?" I cried in stunned anger. "Hey, stop!" I slipped over the straw as I started to lurch toward the sliding door. I fell down hard, but quickly scrambled to my feet. "Franklin, stop biting your leg, please." I darted toward the door, but I wasn't fast enough. As the heavy door rumbled shut, the rectangle of light grew narrower. Narrower. The door slammed with a deafening bang. The darkness slid around me, circled me, covered me. "Hey, let me out!" I screamed. "Let me out of here!" My scream ended in a choked sob. My breath escaped in noisy gasps. I pounded on the wooden barn door with both fists. Then I frantically swept my hands over the door, searching blindly for a latch, for something to pull, some way to open the door. When I couldn't find anything, I pounded on the door until my fists hurt. Then I stopped and took a step back. "Calm down, Jody," I told myself. "Calm the fuck down. You'll get out of the barn. You'll find a way out. It's not like you're trapped here forever." I tried to force away my panic. I held my breath, waiting for my heart to stop racing. Then I let my breath out slowly. Slowly. That's with five O's. I was just starting to feel a little better when I heard the scraping sound. A dry scraping. Really? As opposed to like a wet scraping? There's no wet scraping, asshole. The sound of a shoe crunching over straw. Oh, I let out a sharp cry, then raised both hands to my face and listened. Scrape. 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 The sound of footsteps. Slow, steady footsteps. So light on the barn floor. Footsteps coming toward me in the darkness. Chapter 11. Who's there? I choked out, my voice a hushed whisper. No reply. Scrape. 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 I'm actually at my fingers as claws as I'm scraping left and then right. What the fuck? Why do I need to act all this out? But it would be good for a live show. Who wants to kickstart that bitch? The soft, scratchy footsteps came closer. "Who is it?" I cried shrilly. No reply. I stared into the darkness. I couldn't see a thing. Scrape. Scrape. Whoever, or whatever, was moving steadily toward me. I took a step back, then another. You could say that I took two steps back. I tried to cry out, but my throat was choked with fear. I let out a terrified gasp as I backed into something. In my panic, it took me a few seconds to realize that it was only a wooden ladder. The ladder that led up to the fucking hay area. The footsteps crunched closer, closer. "Please," I uttered in a tiny, choked voice. "Please, don't." Closer. Closer, scraping toward me through the heavy darkness.
I gripped the sides of the ladder. Please leave me alone. Before I realized what I was doing, I was pulling myself up the ladder. My arms trembled and my legs felt as if they each weighed 1,000 pounds, much like my grandmother's. But I scrambled rung by rung toward the hayloft, away from the frightening, scraping footsteps down below. When I reached the top, I lay flat on the hayloft floor, struggling to listen, to hear the footsteps over the loud pounding of my heart. Was I being followed? Was the thing chasing me up the ladder? I held my breath. I listened. Scraping sounds. Scraping footsteps. Go away! I screamed frantically. Whoever you are, just go away! But the sound continued, dry and scratchy, like straw brushing against straw. Scrambling to my knees, I turned to the small, square hayloft window. Sunlight filtered in through the window. The light made the hay strewn full over the floor gleam like slender strands of gold. My heart still pounding, I crawled into the window. Or to the window, not into that bitch yet. Yes, the heavy rope was still tied to the side, the rope that Mark and I always used to swing down to the ground. I can get out of here, I told myself happily. I can grab the rope and swing out to the hayloft. I can escape. Does it bother anyone else as much as me when people say escape? I can escape. It also bothers me when people say espresso. The more you know. Eagerly, I grabbed the rope with both hands. Then I poked my head out the window and gazed down to the ground and let out a scream of surprise and horror. Alright, so it's getting close to the time where I need to sleep. So I'm trying to figure out what I need to do. So I think I'm going to finish recording this, edit it, upload it, but not post it. But I'll still post it immediately, though I'd like to get on the Saturday morning routine. And then I'll take all the clothes out of the dryer that are currently drying, fold those bitches, walk Frank, and go to sleep. Heyo. Then I'm going to be sleepy. Complain, complain. Chapter 12. That was useless. I'm sorry I explained that to you. Not with you. Fuck you. I'm explaining things to you. I'm laughing at you, bitches. Gazing down, I saw a black hat. Beneath it, a black coat. A scarecrow. Perched outside the barn door, as if standing guard. It jerked its arms and legs at the sound of my scream. As I stared in disbelief, it hurried around the side of the barn, hobbling on its straw legs, its arms flapping at its sides, imaginably like those big inflatable things that Sweet D dances like. I blinked several times, possibly 7, possibly 8. Was I seeing things? My hands were cold and wet. I gripped the rope more tightly, taking a deep breath. I plunged out the small square window. The heavy rope swung out over the front of the barn. Down, down, I hit the ground, hard, landing on my feet. Yeah. Ow! I cried out as the rope cut my hands. I let go and ran around to the side of the barn. I wanted to catch up to that scarecrow. I wanted to see if it really was a scarecrow. A scarecrow that could run. Ignoring my fear, I ran as fast as I could. No sign of him on this side of the barn. My chest began to ache. My temples throbbed. I turned the corner and headed around back of the barn, searching for the fleeing scarecrow, and ran into Styx. Hey! We both shouted in surprise as we collided. I frantically untangled myself from him, staring past him. I saw that the scarecrow had vanished. What's the hurry? Styx demanded in a new voice. You practically ran me over! He was wearing faded denim jeans, slashed at both knees, coincidentally like Slash, and had faded purple muscle shirt that showed off how skinny he was. His black hair was tied back in a short ponytail. A scarecrow, I stammered, and then, that instant, I knew. In that instant, I solved the whole mystery of the scarecrows. If I were smart, I would have ended it there, but I'm gonna read one more big-ass chapter. Chapter 13 of The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight on Dune Reads Goosebumps. I'm Dune! It hadn't been a scarecrow, it was Styx. In the woods, down by the creek, and now, outside the barn, Styx, playing another one of his mean tricks. Styx and his tricks always sucking dicks, that's what we say on the playground. And I was suddenly certain that Styx had somehow made the scarecrows twitch and pulled on their stakes last night. Styx just loved fooling with the city kids, with our education and dentistry. Ever since Mark and I had been little, he'd play the scariest, meanest practical jokes on us. Sometimes Styx could be a nice guy,
but he had a real cruel streak.
"I thought y'all were fishing," he said casually.
"Well, I'm not," I snapped.
"Sticks, why do you have to try to scare us?"
"Huh?"
He pretended he didn't know what I was talking about.
"Sticks, give me a break," I muttered.
"I know you were the scarecrow just now. I'm not stupid."
"Scarecrow? What scarecrow?"
he asked, giving me a wide-eyed, innocent expression. "You were dressed as a scarecrow," I accused him, "or else you carried one here and pulled it on a string or something."
"You crazy," Sticks replied angrily.
"Have you ever been out in the sun this long? You got sunstroke and shit. You're like Lindsay Lohan."
"Sticks, give up," I said. "Why are you doing this? Why do you keep trying to scare Mark and me? You scared your dad, too."
"Jody, you're nuts," he exclaimed. "I really don't have time to be dressing up in costumes just to amuse you and your brother."
"Sticks, you're not fooling me," I insisted. "You..." I stopped short when I saw Sticks' expression change.
"Dad?" he cried, suddenly frightened. "Dad? You said he was scared?"
I nodded.
"I've got to find him," Sticks exclaimed frantically. He could do something terrible."
"Sticks, your joke has gone far enough," I cried. "Just stop it."
But he was already running toward the front of the barn, calling for his father, his voice shrill and frantic.
Cocktail pause.
Sticks didn't find his dad until after dinner time. That's the next time I saw him, too, just before dinner. He was carrying his big superstition book, holding it tightly under his arm.
"Jody," he whispered, motioning for me to come close. His face was red. His dark eyes revealed his excitement.
"Hi, Stanley," I whispered back uncertainly.
"Don't tell Grandpa Kurt about the scarecrow," Stanley whispered.
"Huh?"
Stanley's request caught me off guard.
"Don't tell your grandpa," Stanley repeated. "It will only upset him. We don't want to frighten him, do we?"
"But, Stanley," I started to protest. Stanley raised a finger to his lips.
I was really hoping it wasn't going to say my lips, because that's way creepier.
Don't tell, Jody. Your grandpa doesn't like to be upset. I'll take care of the scarecrow. I have the book."
He tapped the big book with his finger.
"Oh, the big book. So he's just an alcoholic."
I started to tell Stanley that the scarecrow was only Sticks playing a mean joke, but Grandma Miriam called us to the table before I could get the words out. Stanley carried his superstition book to the table. Every few bites, he would pick up the big black book and read a few paragraphs. He moved his lips as he read, like I do, but I read out loud. But I was sitting down at the other end of the table and couldn't make out any of the words. Sticks kept his eyes down on his plate and hardly said a word. I think he was really embarrassed that his father was reading the superstition book at the dinner table. But Grandpa Kurt and Grandma Miriam didn't act the least bit surprised. They talked cheerfully to Mark and me and kept passing us more food, as if they didn't even notice Stanley's behavior.
"Something weird's going on here."
I really wanted to tell Grandpa Kurt about how Sticks was trying to scare Mark and me, but I decided to listen to Stanley and not upset my grandfather. Besides, I could deal with Sticks if I had to. He thought he was so tough, but he wasn't the...
Dune, calm down, just a little bit more to go.
He thought he was so tough, but I wasn't the least bit afraid of him. Stanley was reading, jabbering away as he read, as Miriam clearly cleared the dinner table. And the dishes.
Dear God. All right, I need a drink up.
Mark and I helped. Then we took our seats as Grandma Miriam carried a big cherry pie to the table.
"Weird," Mark whispered to me, staring at the pie.
He was right. "Doesn't Grandpa Kurt like apple pie?" I blurted out. Grandma Miriam gave me a tense smile.
"Too early in the year for apples," she murmured.
"But isn't Grandpa Kurt allergic to cherries?" Mark asked.
"No, your grandfather was just making a joke about how many virginities he's taken. He's a horrible man."
Grandma Miriam started cutting the pie with a silver pie cutter. "Everyone loves cherry pie."
"Wink,
vagina joke," she replied, concentrating on her work. Then she raised her eyes to Stanley.
"Isn't that right, Stanley?"
Stanley grinned over his book. "It's my favorite," he said. "Grandma Miriam always serves my favorite."
I guess I have to take a cocktail break, because there's a cocktail break. That's the rule.
After dinner, Grandpa Kurt once again refused to tell Mark and me a scary story. We were sitting around the fireplace, staring at the crackling yellow flames, even though it had been so hot the air had grown cool this evening, cool enough to build a nice, toasty fire. Grandpa Kurt was in his rocking chair at the side of the hearth. The old wooden chair creaked as he rocked slowly back and forth. He had always loved to gaze at the fire and tell us one of his frightening stories. You could see the leaping flames reflected in his blue eyes, and his voice would go low and lower and lowest as the story got scarier. But tonight, he shrugged when I asked him for a story. He stared dully at the huge stuffed bear on its pedestal against the wall. Then he glanced across the room at Stanley.
"Wish I knew some good stories," Grandpa Kurt replied with a sigh, "but I've clean run out."
A short while later, Mark and I trudged upstairs to our bedrooms. "What the fuck is his problem?" Mark whispered as we climbed. I shook my head. "Beats me."
That would be funny if they're on a beet farm, but I don't think they are. I think they just grow corn, which is subsidized by the government. That's how they can have a retarded guy and his kid living on the property. It's a really sad system. And they're subsidizing corn, which leads to lots of high fructose corn syrup, which is making all of us fat. It's the tragic world we live in, people.
"He seems so different," Mark said. "Everyone here does," I agreed, "except for Styx. He's still trying to scare us city kids."
"Just ignore him," Mark suggested. "Let's just pretend we don't see him running around in his stupid scarecrow costume."
I agreed. Then I said goodnight and headed to my room. "Ignore the scarecrows," I thought, as I arranged the blankets on the bed. "Just ignore them. I'm not going to think about scarecrows again," I told myself,
thinking about scarecrows.
"Styx can go jump in the creek. And he can piss up a rope." Climbing into bed, I pulled the quilt up to my chin. I lay on my back, staring up at the cracks in the ceiling, trying to figure out what kind of picture they formed. There were three jagged cracks. I decided they looked like bolts of lightning. Lazy, lazy imagination. If I squinted, I could make them look like an old man with a beard. I yawned. I felt really sleepy, but I couldn't sleep. It was only my second night there, here at the farm. It always takes me a while to adjust to being in a new place and sleeping in a different bed.
"You'll get used to it in college, slut."
I closed my eyes. Through the open window, I could hear the soft mooing of the cows from the barn. I could hear the whisper of the wind as it brushed through the tall corn stalks. My nose was totally stuffed up.
"Bet I snore tonight," I thought. "That is, if I ever get to sleep."
I tried counting sheep. It didn't seem to be working, so I tried counting cows.
Big, bulky, bouncing, slow-moving cows.
I counted to 112.
112? What kind of fucking hobbit counting is that? Before I decided that wasn't working either.
I turned on my side. Then, after a few minutes, tried my other side. I found myself thinking about my best friend, Shauna. I wonder if Shauna was having a good time at camp. I thought about some of my other friends, most of them just hanging around this summer, not doing much of anything. When I glanced at the clock, I was surprised to see it was nearly 12. "I've got to get to sleep," I told myself. "I'll be wrecked tomorrow if I don't get sleep."
I'll be wrecked right now, she.
I settled onto my back, pulling the soft quilt up to my chin again. I closed my eyes and tried to picture nothing. Just empty, black space like Dune's imagination. Empty, aimless space. The next thing I knew, I was hearing scratching sounds. I ignored them at first. I thought the curtains were flapping against the open window. "Gotta get to sleep," I urged myself. "Gotta get to sleep." The scratching grew louder, closer. I heard a scraping sound from outside the window. I opened my eyes. Shadows danced on the ceiling. I realized I was holding my breath, listening hard. Another scrape, more scratching. Dry scratching, once again, as opposed to the moist kind. I heard a low groan, like the zombies in Minecraft. "Huh?" A startled gasp escaped my lips. I pulled myself up against the headboard. I tugged the quilt to my chin. Gripping it tightly with both hands, I heard more dry scraping, like sandpaper, I thought. Suddenly, the room grew darker. I saw something pull itself up to the window, a dark figure blocking the moonlight.
That's kind of scary.
Who's there?
I tried to call, but my voice came out a choked whisper. I could see a shadowy hand, black against the purple sky. It rose up in the window, dark shoulders, followed by a darker chest, black against black. A silent shadow slipping into my room. It could be an incubus. Help! Another stammered whisper. My heart had stopped beating. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe. It slid over the windowsill, brushed away the curtains as it lowered itself into my room. Its feet scraped over the bare floorboards. Scratch, scratch, scratch. It moved slowly, steadily toward my bed. I struggled to get up. Too late. My feet tangled in the quilt. I fell to the floor, landing hard on my elbows. I raised my eyes to see it move closer. I opened my mouth to scream as it emerged from the shadows. And then I recognized him, recognized his face. Grandpa Kurt, I cried. Grandpa Kurt, what are you doing here? Why did you climb in the window? He didn't reply. His cold blue eyes glared down at me, his whole face twisted into an ugly frown. And then he raised both arms above me, and I saw he had no hands. Clumps of straw poked out from his jacket sleeves. Only straw. Grandpa, no! I shrieked. And so ends part one of The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune. This may be the longest episode. No, I think I've gone longer, but I probably shouldn't have done the last chapter, but, you know, that's dedication, you know? Someone's got to read the Goosebumps. I still think going up on a Saturday morning release schedule would be fun and stay up with the nostalgia of the whole thing, but I may not do that. I don't know. I'm going to get this out tomorrow, but like I said, I got to walk Franklin and stuff. I got to fold some laundry, you know? I got shit to do, but the only thing that you have to do is stay spooky, bitches.